Next Step number 663, February 18, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here, and if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Okay, go ahead. I'll give you a chance. Go ahead and tell me. Tell me, what is Lent? You know, you ask 10 different people, and I bet you'd get 10 different answers. And it's not like it's critical of people saying it, because it is really one of those things that falls into a tradition that's, well, we call it a Christian tradition, but certainly the Roman Catholics have a system to their Lent. Certainly the Orthodox have a system to their Lent. Certainly Protestants understand Lent in a different way, and everyone's perceiving it and understanding it in a different way gets confusing. It's not just Lent. Yes, I agree. I know. It's not Lent. I mean, this is what separates, you know, the mainline Orthodox, Catholic, Protestant, the differences of Christianity. And I know we always say, like, let's focus on our similarities. But to us, in the Armenian Orthodox tradition, Lent is a very special time. It's marked in an unusual way, not from Ash Wednesday, but from Monday. And this is the first week. We're in the first week of Lent. And so I hope it's been going good for you. It marks also a period of 40 days. And it goes to 49 days, if you know it's a 7x7 matrix, all the way to Easter. And this has to do with the tabernacle feast and so on. You know, you could, and that's going to be one of the things we're going to talk about today, about all these different ways of complicating something that is very, very simple. Think about that Lent is 40 days and you'll figure it out. And you got, I mean, even within Armenian Orthodox tradition, people look at it different ways. Like for me, it's a simple count, right? It started Monday after Bun Paregint on the day of good living. And so you count it off and you go to 40 days and you end up on that Saturday before Palm Sunday, Lazarus Saturday. And if you went to the Armenian hymnal or the Armenian prayer book, Avak Shapat, Holy Week, you see that Holy Week begins with Lazarus Saturday, the day before Palm Sunday. So it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? 40 days, you have all the way till that Saturday, which would technically be the Friday night when the sun goes down, Friday night. That would be the end of the 40-day period of fasting for Lent. You'd have then Lazarus Saturday. You'd have Palm Sunday, Jesus' triumphant entry into Jerusalem. And then you'd have Holy Week. And so fasting-wise, which is, you know, one of the outward ways of expressing Lent, you would have a fast for 40 days, and then you'd have a little celebration, a small little break to celebrate the Palm Sunday, and then you'd go back into the fast for the duration of Holy Week. And I'm mentioning this because so many people, there's so many different ways of understanding Lent and celebrating that Lent. You know, I spoke about that last week in last week's podcast, that it's really not a negative reality, but it is a celebration. And I got a couple nice comments, especially about when I talked about the idea that let's not talk about I'm giving up meat. Let's talk about that. Hey, guess what? I'm going to become a vegan for the next 40 days. Not bad, right? I mean, you think about how health specialists are telling us that we are what we eat and our diets have to, well, look at it. You got an opportunity there, right? An opportunity to celebrate. But you and I both know that's just an outward means. It's a superficial means of doing the Lenten thing. There's so much more than just the dietary restrictions or the celebration of diet. There's also the attitude. There's also the prayers. And this is what I'm talking about, that you ask 10 different people what Lent is, and I bet you'll get 10 different answers. Some people, it'll be very superficial. It's time where I give up meat. For others, it's a time for prayer. It's time where I go into hibernation and I just think about what's important. I get into a meditative state. And all of these are very, very valid answers for what Lent is. Because to each of us, it means a certain different thing because of the way we're brought up. If you've been brought up in a traditional home where just naturally the day after Bara Gintan, the first day of Lent, there would be no meat, then it's probably likely that you're going to do that with yourself and with your children. If that wasn't a part of your tradition, and you know, there's millions of people who don't even celebrate Lent, right? Okay, so it's maybe nothing. Maybe you're coming as a neophyte into Orthodoxy and you're learning about it and you're saying, well, what do we do during this time? And so we talk about the different messages that came to us from the Bara Gintan reading last Sunday. And those were the three elements of Lent that we highlight, namely prayer, namely fasting, and almsgiving, or doing acts of charity. In other words, it's not a restrictive time. It's a time where we are heightened, where we pray more, we fast more. We share the giving, the goodness that God has given us. I thought about this just the other day when I signed a letter saying God bless. And I said, wow, is that a little bit bold of me to sign off God bless? Like, who am I to say God bless you? You know, shouldn't I be saying may God bless you? That's a wish from me, right? And I caught myself. I go, wait a minute. If God gives us blessings in which we believe that we are blessed by God, can you hang on to that blessing? No, you can't. Actually, what you need to do is pass it along. Pass along God's blessings to others. Share the blessing that God has given you. So, yes, God bless. What a beautiful statement. And that's if you greet a priest in the Armenian tradition, you greet a priest by saying, Ortnetsekam, Ortnyader, bless me, Father. And his response to you is, may God bless you. Astvazortne, God bless you. It's the exchange or the sharing of a blessing. Yeah, so that works, right? But back to the subject of the Lenten period, you know, different ways of looking at it. So as I was saying, for me, I counted off 40 days right after Bun Bara Gintan. So last Monday was the first day. And, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you get all the way to the Saturday before Palm Sunday. There's another system that people use, and they say, well, it is 40 days, but it's between the first day of Lent, namely last Monday, and Easter. And you say, wait a minute, that's 7 weeks. That makes, I'll do the math. Wait, I can't do that in my head. Let me get my calculator. 7 times 7. Oh, that's 49 days. Wait, what happened there? But you know what? We don't fast on Sunday. Sundays are not fasting days. Therefore, it is 49 minus those 7. So now you have a problem of having a 42-day Lenten cycle. I mean, there's just many, many ways that people have tried to explain this. I think mine is the most simple. It's 40 days. from the beginning of Lent to the end of Lent. And then begins Holy Week. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. I came on this formula several years ago and just kind of like have been writing about it and putting in it. And I'm really glad because I'm catching places here and there that people are using that formula and they're talking about it. Because the traditional one has been Lent starts from the first day and goes all the way through to Easter. And then you take out the Sundays of Lent. And, you know, it just adds to the confusion. And that's really the topic that I'm coming to you with today. It's about adding to the confusion about what is it about us that we want to make things more complicated than they are. If you think about what Lent is, this period of Lent, yes, it has the trappings, right? About eating, it has the trappings about doing too. But the bottom line is back to basics. What is it that we lost? Whether you want to call that the Garden of Eden, you want to call that, what is it that we lost in innocence? What is it that we have lost along the way that we are at the place we are right now? Having a child in my family, a grandson, you know, you watch him run around and you remember the carefreeness of life. How carefree it is, you know, it just kind of like goes. It's like one of those Energizer bunnies, you know, you just put the battery in and boom, takes off, goes around, moves around, runs around. Yeah. Because there's no care about like what's going to happen. It just keep doing it. He'll grab something in the house and just make a beeline for my room. And I'm going, wait, you can't do that. And he just goes. He goes, why? Because they're carefree. But along the way, what happens? They start learning. We start learning. And life gives us a few little slaps in the face here and there. We have our difficulties, our difficult moments, and then all of a sudden, what happens? We become hardened to life. And sometimes that hardening takes us in bad directions. And so we come to a point where, you know, people need counseling. People turn to different ways of escape, whether it's drugs or alcohol, whatever it might be, or other kinds of vices. And you could think of so many. I mean, it's just a natural process. You have to deal with the issues that are bombarding you. Whereas the Lenten period is exactly that. It's to deal with what life has given us. And to return back to the basics, to return back to the garden. That's where it is, right? The Garden of Eden was this land of innocence. Adam and Eve walking around, right? And all of a sudden, after they lose their innocence, what's the big deal? They sow fig leaves. Because they realize that they are naked. What does God say? Who told you you were naked? It's like this, my eyes are open now. You know, I mean, think about it. Even in that story, it's a very superficial concept. It's expressed through this superficial thing, and literally superficial, because it's a matter of clothes. Put the clothes on because you are naked and cover your shame. And even in that story, which is supposed to be a story about us losing that innocence, we find that there's ways of complicating something that is very, very simple. Or perhaps it is a way of explaining something that we don't want to deal with. There are certain topics that we know that when we get into it, people don't want to deal with it. They don't want to discuss certain things. And they find it easier to talk in different ways. And the easiest example is this is just child vocabulary, you know, for certain sensitive issues that we as adults do not want to deal with or do not want to talk about, and we will make a child vocabulary to talk about those things, talk about things that we consider shameful. And a lot of it has to do with the human body. And it comes down to that issue right in the garden, you know. Who told you you were naked? And you think for a moment, okay, these people, their eyes have been open, and the first thing that they realize is that they're naked? Or is that the author of the story telling us that there's a problem here, right? So you see that it's a reflection of the person that's writing this story too. So to me, what the Lenten period is a period of not putting on clothes. It's not taking off clothes. It's about returning to the garden. And in that garden, it's not about being clothed or not clothed. It's about the innocence of life. It's returning to the garden where that child is, the carefreedness, where you're able to run around and enjoy all of the beauty and the wonder that God has given us. And you say, well, that's perfect. Let's do it. Let's go out and enjoy everything that God has given us. But we can't, right? And just the fact that we can't complicates things. God gives us the beach, gives us the ocean, gives us this beautiful California coastline. Let's go out and enjoy it. But you know you can't, right? I mean, you just can't jump into the water. You need to have certain degree of some kind of equipment, right? Whether it's just basic clothes to put over your skin, otherwise you're going to get sunburn. You have to put some kind of sun lotion on you to deflect the rays of the sun. So all of a sudden we start constructing small but meaningful little additions. Like, I can go out and enjoy the beach provided I have this. It's like I could go out for a car ride provided I have a car. Oh, yeah. Okay, I gotta get a car. I gotta put gas in the car. And then I've got to follow rules by tying myself into the car. I've got to have seatbelts on. And by the way, I can't drive that car until I get insurance for the car. So we start constructing different, like, I don't want to say restrictions, but rules and regulations that govern the actions that we do. Then this is the basic formation of society, right? I mean, think about the most simple things that you want. Okay, think about it this way. Think about in religion. People say, oh, we want to have a Bible study. Well, that's nice. You want to have a Bible study. But doesn't that presuppose that somebody's going to have a Bible? I mean, even if everybody's just going to come and listen to somebody talk, it means that somebody has to have a Bible. Where do you get a Bible? Well, yeah, I know. You can go into a hotel and open up a drawer and steal it, and the Gideons wouldn't mind. You can go up to your pastor and say, hey, I need a Bible. Can you give me one? But for the most part, you have to pay for it. Yeah, you do. And to pay for it means you need to earn the money to buy that Bible. It means you have to have something that you do to get it. And maybe this isn't the best example because people will say, well, Bible is free, but it's not. It's not. Bible doesn't come in the form that you're accustomed to. If you have a traditional Bible, it's probably got a nice leather backing, and you know that leather costs money. And yes, there are cheap ones that you can get, and they're all the same because you can have, you could go online. But hey, if I'm going to go online, it means I'm going to have internet access. I have to have a device that will decipher that internet and get me to the website. You know what I'm getting at, right? Complication. The simplest things that you want to do in life are complicated by the lifestyle that we have set up around it. Lent, then, is a time for us to go back to the garden, to go back to that time of innocence, to go back and find out really what is essential. And the words of Jesus Christ say it beautifully. He is tempted to change the stone into bread, and man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Okay, so what are those words that come from the mouth of God? Okay, get me a Bible and I'll read it. To get a Bible, I need to buy one. I need to get a job so I can get a... No. Relax. Relax. It's not about the Word of God being in a Bible. It's about experiencing the Word of God in our lives. I'll tell you something, and I know you. There's many of you who could relate to this. I learned the Word of God from the example led by my grandmother. And I don't think she read a Bible to me. But there was the Word of God there. And I know you can relate to that if you've had a caring person in your life, a loving person in your life, somebody who has shared the Word of God with you. Not by saying, well, Jesus said you have to do this and that, but by living that example. When we come back after the song, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you the complications, the layers that we put on there, and really kind of like help during this first week of Lent to kind of rid ourselves of some of those complications, returning back to the garden. We take a break every week to play a song. It's offered as just a little time out to digest some of the things that have been said and also to enjoy a tune. And this is what I picked out for this week.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once. No, never, never, never. I listen to my words, but they fall far below. I let my music take me where my heart wants to go. I've swam upon the devil's lake, but never, 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 never. I'll never make the same mistake. No, never, never, never.
Stevens. Yes, I had to go this direction. We're talking about simplicity. And I thought this was, perfect, right? The wind. I listened to the wind. And, we had a chance to see Cat Stevens, my sister and I, several years ago. Really enjoyed it, but it was probably, if there was ever a mismatch for a venue and an artist, that was it. We saw him at what was then called the Fabulous Forum in Inglewood. And it's this huge sports stadium. And imagine this tiny little voice, this sweet little voice that we were just, it was like the mellow years. We'd take off on being mellow. You know, you'd drink tea and you'd listen to Cat Stevens. And we had a chance to see Cat Stevens. Not while we didn't see him, really. We were in this huge forum. And way out there on the other side of the forum, there was like a stage. And we saw a little dot with somebody. There was no jumbotrons and jumbo screens where they'd project it. So you really had to focus in. And we saw him play. It was beautiful. And it's a memory that you know, it's a lasting memory of that concert. And I wanted to play that for you because it's that simplicity that we're talking about today. It's that simplicity that that we're invited to find during the Lenten journey. This particular version that you just heard, that is off of a small little extra album. It is called Yusuf's Cafe, when he changed his name to Yusuf. And I will have a link on today's show notes so you can, well, take a look at all of his music and enjoy what's on the other side of those links. Well, we are back and we are talking about some of the complexities of life that are supposed to be thrown out during the Lenten period. And this is an important discussion because Lent has so many meanings for so many different people in different ways. Different traditions approach Lent in a different way. And I want to share with you an Armodoxy view of Lent. Because Lent is really nothing more than just simplifying. Like I said a few seconds ago, I said the complexities of life, we're talking about it. It's about taking those complexities and simplifying them. Is that possible? Well, you know, think about it in these terms. If you were to listen, this morning I just had this incredible appetite for Beethoven. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know what got into me, but as I was preparing for the podcast, I was just doing all kinds of stuff, and I just put on some Beethoven in the background. And it takes you to tears. I was specifically, it was the first time that I had really paid attention, if you can call it that, because I'm not just sitting there listening to it. I'm actually doing stuff, but I was just listening, paying attention to Beethoven's Third Symphony. And that's a weird symphony because you don't really hear it that often. It's not played that often. And I'm just listening to it and I'm going, wow. First of all, there's like themes that get repeated. And then when you talk about themes that are repeated, you think about obviously his Fifth Symphony, you know, da 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 da, and it's like repeated through the entire first movement, da 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 da, da 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 da, and you listen to it, and it's the part that sticks with you, right? It's the simplicity. We crave it. We crave it. If you listen to Beethoven's Fifth, it's this complex, complex symphony. And if I were to ask you, have you heard Beethoven's Fifth? You'd say, oh yeah, da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun. We bring it down to the simple. And this is the genius of Beethoven, right? You've got this huge symphony with everything going on, and then you come down to this small little riff. And it's true of, you know, if you think about all music that we listen to right now, too. It comes down to these small little riffs. Yeah, let's play a few, okay? Just listen. This is something I put together a few years ago when I was listening to an interview by Ian Anderson. He was talking about the riffs and about just following, but listen.
Thank you.
Okay, you probably there are songs in there that, you know, if you play those couple notes, you know exactly what that song is. They're the riffs. They're the ones that catch us, that bring us in. But they're all simplified, right? Of a greater piece. You listen to the first few moments of Stairway to Heaven. What an incredibly complicated piece that is. But it's very simple, isn't it? And so it is with actually everything in our lives. We are looking for ways of getting back to the garden, getting back to that simplicity. The idea that we identify with these small little riffs, with these small little tones, tells us that as humans, we are looking for that simplicity in the complexity. And I'm saying this because last night I had a chance to listen to a lecture given on the Beatitudes, and it was given by an Orthodox leader, and it was very good, just a lot of stuff to take in. But as I was listening, it occurred to me that there's a simplicity of Christ's message that we complicate rather than simplify, rather than just offer. And I think this is one of the biggest reasons why I always shy away from Bible studies. I always want to preface it by saying these are really questions in faith. It's our faith that we need to start questioning because God gives it to us in such a pure format. I mean, listen to the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. And, you know, you read the Beatitudes, and here's the problem. It goes against everything we believe in, and so you need somebody to kind of like, let's say, okay, I'm going to explain it to you. I'm going to explain why the meek will inherit the earth, because the rest of the world tells you that the meek are just, you know, thrown away. In fact, you can imagine what a meek person will inherit. Nothing. Garbage. It's the strong. And, you know, we then start trying to explain it. Well, meek doesn't mean weak. And we start to explain that why it's okay to mourn. We try to explain what the poor in spirit are. Instead of looking at a very simple explanation. And I thought of this last night. It's the most simplest of all explanations when you hear the Beatitudes. Who is Jesus talking to? He's talking to a group of people who have been beaten up, abused, persecuted, who have seen death, and who are very fragile at this moment. Fragile in the sense that, yes, their spirits are poor. And Jesus says, you know, you're blessed because the kingdom of heaven is yours. You know what? I know you're mourning, but you will be comforted. You act meek because there's other people who are bullying you around. It's okay because you're going to inherit the earth. I know you're thirsting and you're hungering for righteousness. But you don't worry, you're going to be satisfied. And look at that simple explanation that Jesus is talking to people who aren't us. Yeah, we're not sitting there. He's talking to a group of people who are downtrodden. You take these same Beatitudes and go into a village on some place in the earth where people are abused, where they are downtrodden, where they don't have all the amenities that we place in front of us and we say, look at us, We are a people that have arrived. You place these Beatitudes in front of someone who doesn't have all the luxuries that we enjoy in the first world. And those people will relate to it in a completely different way than we will relate to it. And this is really important because I think we complicate it. We complicate it, and I certainly heard this last night as I'm listening to it. Well, Jesus meant this, and this is this, and if we look at the Greek translations, if we look, it's not that complicated. It really isn't that complicated. When Jesus said, "Blessed are the mourners," it's because people were mourning. And he's saying, you're blessed because God still loves you. And this is throughout the New Testament. This is the power of the New Testament. This is the power of Christ's message. Is taking something that is complicated, our lives, messed up as it is, and really bringing it down to, listen to this. As messed up as life is, God is still in control. As messed up as you feel, God still loves you. That's how simple it is. He was talking to a group of people that didn't have leather-bound Bibles. He was the Bible. He was that message. He was the gospel, the good news. He was God sitting in their midst. And one of the things that we take away from the entire Christian story is that our search for God ends with Jesus Christ. And this is why he turns to Philip and he says, Philip says, show us the Father. And he says, I'm with you. What are you talking about? I've been with you all this time. What do you mean, show me the Father? I'm with you. And throughout the Gospels, we see this. We as human beings are searching. We're searching for truth. We're searching for meaning. We're searching for life. And when Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, that's it. There you go. There's God. Our search ends with Christ. But what do? We keep piling it on. We keep saying, we got to look at it this way and this way. I'm going to be doing a wrap up for a Bible study group next, I think it's Tuesday night. And they've asked me to speak about the Gospel of Luke. And I'm just really excited that they have just done a Gospel of Luke. Because really, when you think about it, Bible was never meant to be torn apart. And I see this all the time in Bible studies. Well, you know, Luke says this, and he is supported because James said this in the 4th chapter, 17th verse, or that St. Paul said this in his letter to the Corinthians, but not before what he wrote to Timothy. It was never meant to be taken bit by bit. It was meant to take as an entirety. Because what you're reading, when you call it, like I read that in Corinthians, it's a letter that he wrote to the people in Corinth 2,000 years ago. He's writing to the people in Corinth who had no knowledge that he had written a letter to the people in Ephesus, the book of Ephesians. And James, sitting around, didn't know that Paul was writing these things. So all of a sudden, we come to the 2nd century when church fathers are saying, hey, you know, we're a body, we're the church of Christ, and we have to put together the scriptures that we have because the eyewitnesses are going. And remember, 1st century Christians were all living in a time of imminent end. They thought that the end of the world was imminent. It was going to happen. So, you know, when you're living in that time, a lot of things are very different. And so with all those conditions in there, they didn't need to put together a Bible because they had just heard Jesus. They just spent the last 3 years with him. But as we're going down, no, our calculation's wrong. The world isn't ending. We're living. And so we want to document those things. And so the Gospels get written. There's letters that are floating around. And there's a lot of apocryphal words. Anyway, this is not a lecture about the Bible. All that, just to make a note that, you know, these books came about, what we call Corinthians, what we call the Gospels. These are all books that were written independent of one of another. Perhaps you can make a case for the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that they were based on Luke. So there was the source, they were based on Mark's Gospel, and Matthew took bits and pieces of it. Luke took bits and pieces of it. These were eyewitness accounts and put them together. And we have these Gospels. So those played off of one another. But for the most part, you've got all of these books that were put together in a Gospel. And you're not supposed to really say that this one justifies this unless you are giving an apology for it. This is called apologetics. So I'm going to tell you why Jesus said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy," because we're going to look at this book and we're going to look at this writing. We're going to put it all together, and therefore I'm going to justify his words of saying you need mercy. Forget about all that. We don't need to justify Jesus's words. You either believe it or you don't. That's it. That's what faith is. That's what we're called to do, to believe it. And if you don't believe it, there's nobody who can force you to believe it. But I think that's really the biggest challenge for teaching faith, if you will, if that's the right word for it, or transmitting faith, is to really give the simple explanation of what it is. Jesus was talking to a people who were hurting. Jesus lived in a time where people were hurting. Jesus is talking to people today who are hurting. Jesus lives today in a world that is hurting. And now we get to the point where we understand that his message, his life, and what he gives to us is really timeless. I'm sharing this with you on this first week of Lent because I want Lent to have a very special meaning in your lives. To me, throughout my life, it has been this very special period of 40 days where I've never wanted to live a life of Lent. I would imagine that if you're a monastic, that would probably be something that you try to do for 40 days and you hope that your whole life can be there. No, and this is completely my choice, as I believe God gives us the choice. There are others who will be comfortable in that. To me, that 40 days is very special because it is the catapult with which I live out the next 325 days. By taking the lessons that I learned. And one of the greatest lessons that I learned during Lent is to simplify life, to really come down to what is essential. And so there's a lot of, you know, I'll put a link on today's show notes. Check out my guide to Lent. In fact, I have it in Armenian and in English. And one of the things in there is there's like a link to my son Vanerjan several years ago put together this menu because people were asking, well, what do we eat? It's just a very simple, and we call it the bland page. On the internet, it's called the bland page, and the looks of it is as bland as the food that comes in there. But what you do find is in that blandness, in that simplicity, you find a lot of flavor. And if I could pick up on that metaphor and leave you with that metaphor, take a look at those recipes. Because really, on the outside, you look at it and you say, oh man, what am I going to do? I can't eat meat. But when you look at the recipes, you see that there is a lot of flavor and there is a lot of nutrition. In that simplicity, we find the beauty. And it's no different with life. It's no different with Christ's message. We don't need to justify it. We don't need to create a story for it to believe in it. Now, I understand, and really, it's not my forte. I understand that there are people who want to teach it, who want to make these connections and everything. God bless them. It's just that I'm sharing with you, my listeners, who have been on this path to find something greater in their lives. And it's not about just picking apart words and saying, you know, well, I read this word and I wonder what it means in the Greek and the Hebrew and the Aramaic. God bless you if you want to do that. I mean, I think that there's a value in it and people want to look at it. But that's not what brings people to faith. That will give you an understanding. It'll give you some intellectual gymnastics. It'll give you an opportunity to understand and maybe fortify your faith. But it doesn't bring you to faith. You understand the difference? It's like you're at faith and you want some things to, like, you know, to fortify it, to make it stronger. And so you learn that Jesus said this and this and this and this. But really what brings you to faith is this very simple understanding that God loves us and cares about us. It's understanding that the Bible is the breath of God. Astvazashunsh. And in that breath, we are receiving, well, we're receiving God's breath, namely life. We are receiving what? What did we say at the very beginning? The blessing of life. And so in that breath, we understand love, because if we have that life, we know that we have to love. We know that we have to share that blessing. That blessing comes to me from God, and it's up to me to share that blessing. And so my life becomes a life not just lived for myself, but for others. And the simplicity of that is that Jesus expresses that not only in words, but in his action of going up to the cross, sharing that during his crucifixion, and then showing us that the way of the cross leads you to resurrection. I wanted to share this message with you this particular week because we're at the beginning of the Lenten season, and we have so many different ways. I've heard so many different things this past week, different explanations of what Lent is and why we do this. It's too complicated. Lent has to be a little bit more simple, because its entire goal is to simplify our lives. And as I said, you know, it's like, to me, this is what Lent is about. I take a very personal approach. It's meant this to me through the years. And you know what? It's these 40 days that for me have always been about being the catapult to go on to the next 325 days. In other words, to life. Because I don't want to live in this Lenten period all my life. I don't think it's ever meant to be this Lenten period for life. I understand there's monastics who want to do that. That's fine. I said it, yes. But for me, you know, just right now, as we are recording this right now, the Mars mission, there's going to be, it's called Perseverance. It's going to be landing on Mars. To me, that's exciting. And you can't get there on simplicity alone. There's complexities. And that's part of the complexity of my being, of wanting to know more and being part of this huge mystery that we call this universe, and really connecting all these dots. That's something that is part of me. And I don't make any apologies for it. But during Lent, I try to find some time to simplify. It's not that I'm not wondering about what's going on Mars. It's that's there. But to understand, to get to Mars, there's all these tiny little steps. It's about the people and finding that simplicity, that love, and that sharing of God's blessings. And if I could do that, I understand that the reality of that Mars landing, of what's going on in Mars, or I'm using that as a metaphor, of course, for all the wonders of the world, is something that really leaves us in awe, and a respect and a love for God. So I hope I gave you something to think about, something to walk away with, and most, more importantly, something to practice during the next few weeks. Right now, that music tells us that here's Susie with her message. I'm going to be back and share with you some parting comments, okay? See you on the other side.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that message. And thank you, all of our listeners, for all the love, the support, your prayers, which go a long way in keeping this ministry moving forward. With that being said, one of the big highlights of our ministry is coming up March 6th. We have the Reclaim Conference. Now in its fifth year, we're going to be talking about reclaiming faith in the post-pandemic era. And you will not want to miss this one because, first of all, it's going to be easily accessible. It is in a virtual environment. It's going to be completely online. And guess what? You, as Next Steppers, already know what that means because we do it every week, don't we? The virtual environment. Well, this one has a little bit more class to it in that you'll be able to see the pretty people out there. And in this one, you just hear my voice, you know. But on the Reclaim Conference, you'll get to see some beautiful people talking about reclaiming faith. It's going to be made up of lectures, three lectures in the morning, myself giving the introduction, Dr. Hiraj Chilingarian from London, from Oxford, is going to be talking about, well, some difficult subjects about life and death. And I'll share with you more details, you know, as we get closer. And then Archbishop Hovnan Derderian is going to be speaking about reclaiming identity and really the vision for the new world. In the afternoon, we have sessions with people and roundtables. And I'm saying afternoons, again, we're talking about California time. But the beauty of this is you can just tune in wherever you are in the world and be a part of this conference. So I don't want you to miss it. In fact, because I love you so much and you're my Next Step listeners, you're getting free registration right now. All you need to do is just go to the show notes and click on that link that says Reclaim Registration. And there'll be some more information on the show notes about it. If you want, first check out the flyer, check out what's going on, and then register for it. Very easy. I think it just takes your name and where do you live? No, don't worry. No one's going to come and bother you. It only asks for the city. I made a point of that. I said, I don't want addresses because people, they see addresses. They think we're going to come out and get them. And I don't even want to get into that. Just want to kind of know where you're at in the world. We got so many listeners. We got so many people throughout the world. Wouldn't it be nice to know that, hey, you know, we've got 20 people from Kentucky. We've got 50 people coming in from the Netherlands. I mean, wouldn't that be great if we just had some kind of idea? I don't need to know your address. Just register. And by the way, you will not be able to go to the conference without a registration because each link is unique. It's built on your name. So you want to do this. Of course, once you get the link, you can watch it with as many people as you want. In fact, we're encouraging parties so long as you socially distance and wear your mask. Don't get me started on the masks. I still do not understand why people are so against it. It's like simple. Put it on. When you're talking to people, put it on. It's like I've got some young people that are part of this young group that we started. And they're seeing me wearing a mask and they're just walking around. Like, what in the world? Why would you think I want to breathe your air? That's how simple it is. Yeah, we're talking about simplifying. That's what masks are about. It's about, I'm protecting you. Imagine if we all tried to protect one another instead of, no, I'm going to show you my breath is okay. I don't want to smell your breath. I don't want to breathe your breath. That's how easy it is. All right. I ranted too much about that. But you could tell I'm bugged about it. Anyway, that does it for today's show. This Sunday, I'm going to be at St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena, California. And if you'd like to join me, it starts at 10:30 in the morning. It'll be the first Sunday of Lent, Expulsion Sunday. I will have a link on today's show notes. Just press it and join us 10:30 California time. So, that does it for our messages. That does it for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our wonderful crew, Ken, our technical man, and Susie, our producer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath cut out.